we go to Loganoff versus Sheridan Memorial Hospital, number 248032.
Is anybody going to argue this case?
I'm sorry, Judge, can you say that again?
Is anyone going to argue this case? I don't see anybody up on the screen.
We're almost there.
Maybe the video is not very good. You have to move over to the right a little bit.
Yep, there we go.
I just don't show up well, Your Honor. Sorry.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Judge Ide, and may it please the court, my name is Don Sullivan. I'm counsel for the plaintiff below appellant here in this matter. I think I can show you in about 2 minutes that there are only really three things for the court to think about, for the court to decide here. And I think I can show you in those 2 minutes, 3 minutes, that they all end up pointing in the same direction and they require a reversal. Let's talk first about summary judgment. When this court sits down to think about how summary judgment should be handled in this case, it does so de novo. I believe both sides agree on that point. Which means, as you know better than I do, this court has to say, well, the issue on this summary judgment, is there an applicable immunity or not? In a summary judgment analysis, the first question is, does the moving party present solid evidence standing alone is sufficient to entitle them to prevail on their defense? I'm going to show you that the answer, the only intellectually honest answer to that question is no. If, as the court below did,
Counsel, is there any doubt that this individual went into the hospital and was diagnosed with COVID plus problems?
There is a dispute about that, Your Honor. I think it is much more accurate to say that he went into the hospital with several presently life-threatening medical conditions and also COVID. And I think that's a very important distinction. The reason I say that is...
Does the statute exclude anything other than willful and wanton negligence when COVID is involved?
Does the statute exclude? The immunity that's stated in the statute, there are three parts to it. I believe both sides agree that part one and part three have no application here at all. One involves giving somebody COVID, exposing somebody to COVID. Nobody is claiming or arguing that. The third has to do with manufacturing personal protective equipment, sanitizer, that kind of stuff. That's not this case. So the only part of the statute that applies is the B portion of the statute, and it contains two sections. The second half, which has to do with, well, if COVID prevents you from getting the patient to a facility that would be appropriate, then they're immune.
Well, that happened. That happened here.
It did not happen here.
Sure did. They tried to move him, and he couldn't be moved at some point because every place was full of COVID patients.
Factually.
the COVID didn't prevent him from physically being moved, but there were no beds anywhere. He couldn't be moved.
I'm gonna say to the court that is incorrect, that there is an assertion by the defense of what you just said. The fact is that all of the negligence, the medical negligence on this fellow was committed in the first admission. And what they did wrong was unrelated to the COVID. They recognized that the crisis problem was the fact that his sodium level was dangerously low. They recognized that's a killer.
Well, what if he came in and presented to the hospital with COVID, and he also had a history of emphysema, and he was having breathing problems, which is something that can occur with both emphysema and COVID, and they negligently treated him and killed him? Do you have a case saying they negligently treated his emphysema so there's no immunity? Or does it get swept up in the COVID?
Well, in your hypothetical, you built in the answer to your own question, which is you said they treated him for COVID and accidentally harmed him on the emphysema side. What's the problem?
Well, let me say it differently. He came in, he tested positive for COVID. He was having breathing problems.
In your hypothetical.
In my hypothetical. He also has emphysema, which also causes the same breathing problem. They treat the breathing problem and it kills him. Can you say, you know what, I'm not going to give any credence to the idea that this was COVID. There is no immunity. He was there because he has emphysema. If he didn't have emphysema, he wouldn't have needed to be there.
You build in the answer you want into your question, Your Honor, and I say that with respect.
Well, I look at your fact pattern and the things that you're saying they were treating are for coterminous with COVID diagnosis.
Thank you for saying that. That is the heart of my case. No, sir, they are not. And
it's your position that the medical evidence would show that low sodium is not a symptom of COVID sometimes.
Absolutely. It is not a symptom. And what I told you is that the evidence they presented, Your Honor, forgive me. You went hook, and I mean this respectfully, but you went, by the way, I mean to reserve 6 minutes, so I'm...
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Go ahead.
The fact is that COVID was a secondary medical problem. He had a metabolic encephalopathy. He had altered mental status, and he had extremely low sodium, which kills you because it messes up your heart and either stops your heart or gives you a stroke. COVID was far down the list, and giving him sodium is not, I repeat, not a treatment for COVID. They were not treating COVID when they pushed sodium, unfortunately, too much too fast, even though their own admitting doctor said, be very careful about this because it'll give him the ODS that they gave him.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. Let me then ask you this. If you look at the text of the statute, doesn't it still sweep you in?
It does not, Your Honor. Are we in agreement that part one and part three are not?
Yes.
Okay, so what we have then...
I mean, we're for purposes of this argument, I'm not... with you, but I'll take your position.
So the only of the three numbered sections, the only one that remotely applies is B, and it is written in the alternative. And All of us, respectfully including this court, have to take the legislature at the words it chose to use. And it wrote two halves of that statute. The second half is what the defense would have and persuaded the trial court to apply. I agree. But, you know, the trial court was mistaken, I dare say misled, because the things they did to him had nothing to do with later efforts to find another hospital for him.
Well, what about this? Acts or omissions by a healthcare facility or provider in arranging for or providing healthcare services or medical care to the claimant that resulted in injury or death to the claimant. That's what happened here. They gave him a treatment. It resulted in his death. It was a negligent act by your estimation by a provider in providing a health care service to the claimant that resulted in injury or death.
A careful reading of the record reflects that Mr. Loganoff is not dead, Your Honor.
Well, it says injury or death. And you don't deny that he's injured. If he's not injured, why are we here?
You just said they killed him. So,
oh, sorry.
Yeah. Well,
convey my apologies to him.
I'm sorry?
I said convey my apologies to him.
I'll assure him it was unintentional.
Yeah. Yes.
The defense admits in the second paragraph of page 29 of their brief that the statute segment that you just read does not require, I'll use their words, does not explicitly require a nexus between the prevention, diagnosis, or treatment of COVID and the immunity, which I take as an admission that if we follow the words chosen by my beloved Wyoming legislature, they accidentally erased all medical negligence causes of action in Wyoming.
Well, maybe they did.
Maybe they did. That's right. So this court has two options, and I'm being forceful, and I mean to
it's
be
okay.
respectful. Your Honor, you kind of came at me, so I have to give as
no,
good
I
as
like
I
to
have.
Joust with people. Go ahead.
I'll tell you a story later about another situation. I jousted with Justice Scalia for
okay.
quite a while. But the statute that they wrote, this half of the only applicable section, Section B, has nothing to do with COVID. And you gotta take them. Every time I appear in front of the Wyoming legislature, because I'm always talking about some statute, and I'm always the only person in the room who ever served in the Wyoming legislature, and I revel in telling the Wyoming Supreme Court, you are duty bound to believe the legislature knew what it was doing and meant what it did. And they all giggle and we move on. You can either read this statute the way the legislature wrote it, or you can find a way to do whatever they left. I mean, one of the options for you to say is the summary judgment stands and by statute, all medical negligence claims are gone. That is an intellectually honest reading of the statute. I hope you won't do that. I will tell you that the what I think you need to do is exactly what I said on page 6 of our reply brief. You can either apply this statute literally. We wipe out all medical negligence claims. Or you can conclude that the Wyoming legislature meant to require a causal nexus, a causal nexus, not a casual nexus. And I ask you, because my time is, I mean, you got to me, Your Honor. I got 1 minute and 9 seconds. I'm going to tell you about
The choice is yours. You can reserve it or tell me your story.
I'm going to tell you my point. I'll tell you my story in private. You got me again. I'm sorry. The other intellectually honest approach that the court can take would be to say, we don't think the legislature meant to wipe out every medical negligence cause of action. We don't believe that. So we're going to read the statute in context, and we're going to read in a causal, not a casual, but a causal requirement. And that brings me to the last thing I've got time to talk about. The affidavit that they submitted from their hospital CEO, who's a perfectly fine doctor, I'm sure, does not say, and you got tripped up on this, respectfully, Judge Carson, does not say, low sodium is a symptom of COVID. He does not say that. I'll bet you $2, Your Honor, you read that carefully, he doesn't say that. But if you turn to our expert, Dr. Schwimmer, who, by the by, is a nephrologist, a kidney doctor who's...
Counsel, you're over time, 36 seconds, so just could you wrap it up?
Yes, ma'am. Page 96 is the operative portion of Dr. Schwimmer's affidavit. And he specifically says, Mr. Loganoff developed ODS as a result of the overly rapid correction of his hyponatremia, not as a result of COVID.
Okay, thank you. We can read that provision in the record.
I had some other good stuff, Judge, but you got me. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Zara Mason. I'm here on behalf of Sheridan Memorial Hospital. I think the first question out of the gate was, is there a dispute about whether or not Mr. Loganoff had COVID-19? And I just have to respectfully disagree, and I can point to the court exactly where that could be found. I believe it's specifically alleged in the complaint. It's clearly stated in Mr. Loganoff's medical records, which were reviewed by Dr. Goddard in his affidavit. But also, it's also in Dr. Schwimmer, his own expert's affidavit. And also for the court to consider is that at the trial court below, in submitting our summary judgment briefing, there was no statement of disputed material facts submitted by counsel. So my argument to that would be, I would say that that is not in dispute. If you look at paragraphs 6 and 8 of Dr. Schwimmer's affidavit, it clearly states in there Mr. Loganoff had COVID-19, with hyponatremia secondary to COVID-19, which is another way of saying his hyponatremia was caused by COVID-19. That's in paragraph 8 of Dr. Schwimmer's affidavit.
So if I looked in some medical texts of what it means for something to be secondary to something else, it would reflect basically what you just told me?
Correct.
Okay.
If you have a condition that is secondary to a primary diagnosis, the primary diagnosis is the cause of anything that happens after it. So I want to focus on, obviously, the statute. We didn't get to the other issues, and I think that's the crux of this appeal. The appellant has argued on pages 17 and 23 of his brief that immunity can't apply in this case because it would be unfair when the hospital had all the equipment it needed, the staff knew how to use it, or they didn't read the results even when they were monitored and recorded. That argument is a red herring. Whether or not immunity applies in this case doesn't turn on whether negligence occurred. It turns on whether the facts of the case fall within the immunity provided by Wyoming's definition of what a COVID-19 liability claim is.
So you agree with him that that sort of the first third buckets in the statute don't apply?
Yeah, so if you're looking at the definition of a COVID-19 liability claim, that's Wyoming Statute 11141. It's got sort of three definitions of what a COVID-19 liability claim is. The first is the idea that you catch COVID from somebody else. And that third bucket is, you know, if you're creating handmade sanitizer and you don't put a label on it and you give it to somebody else, there'd be immunity for that. We're not talking about those two. We're talking about that subsection B there right in the middle. I do agree with that.
So is your position that a plain reading of that statute, and in fact a correct reading of that statute, that regardless of whether it was COVID-19 or not, if it related to the treatment of a malady by the provider, there would be immunity?
So when I read the statute, when this all first came about, I think I kind of read it as a run-on sentence, really, where that second clause does inform the first. I do think there has to be a nexus between the treatment provided and the COVID-19 diagnosis.
What's your basis for that? I mean, it... I mean, give us a canon of construction,
sure.
An analogous case, something that says that basically unlimited language is limited to COVID-19.
So I can answer that kind of in two different ways, which is that just at the plain reading of the statute, that second clause really gives you immunity for those hypotheticals that we talked right out of the gate about. The failure or inability to transfer a patient because those other hospitals were full up, which happened in this case. You are correct about that. And I think the way that I read it was, well, if a healthcare provider would be given immunity for situations in which a patient couldn't be transferred because those facilities were full up, wouldn't it then logically flow from that you would provide immunity for the treatment of patients with COVID-19 when we're talking about the context of a disease that these providers have never seen before? I also think that this court can pretty persuasively refer to and rely on the Mills case that I've cited out of Connecticut. Their immunity to healthcare providers was set forth in executive order. And if you look at the language of that executive order, to counsel's point, it is also missing that COVID-19 word in the first clause of that executive order. And ours is similar in that. So I didn't appreciate that argument from counsel until I read his reply brief, that his real beef with that subsection is the first clause is missing the word COVID-19. So if we go along with that argument, okay, I acknowledge that. The first clause of subsection B is missing that word. And if that creates an ambiguity and this court needs to figure out what to do from there, this court would apply Wyoming's rules of statutory construction, which I will briefly just mention. I'm not aware that at any point prior to this reply brief before this court, there was any argument that this statute was unclear or ambiguous. So going back to this point, though, applying rules of statutory construction under Wyoming law, we would obviously, as this court's familiar with, we construe statutes that are similar in nature or similar in subject. We construe them in pari materia. So if you look at Wyoming's COVID-19 liability claim statute, kind of like what we talked about earlier, you get immunity for if you give somebody COVID, you cough on them, you give them COVID. You get immunity for making your handmade sanitizer and you don't put a label on it and something goes awry. I think it logically fits in there that if you're going to get immunity for those broad ranging things, the whole focus of this idea of immunity is to provide immunity for those healthcare providers who are treating patients with a brand new and unknown disease. I think it fits within those spectrums of possibilities. But also, if you put up the COVID-19 liability claim statute to 35-4-114, that's the actual statute where immunity is provided. And looking at those statutes side by side, we see in there that businesses are given immunity for following state orders. But also, it calls upon retired medical providers, unlicensed, or excuse me, inactive licensees for healthcare, and providers who are licensed in other states. So, and they get immunity. So the way that I think about it is, okay, if we are so desperate for healthcare providers that we're going to give immunity to retired healthcare providers who are chipping in and helping out, we're going to give immunity to healthcare providers who have inactive licenses, and we're going to give immunity to healthcare providers who have licenses in other states. We have to then logically argue and say that folks who are healthcare providers in the state of Wyoming who are actively licensed and who are actively employed, literally in the trenches, treating these COVID-19 patients, those folks are entitled to immunity as well.
Now all that assumes an ambiguity.
Correct, which I'm not going to concede.
Right, but the plain language doesn't seem ambiguous.
I would agree with that. And again, I don't think that argument was really made at the district court level. It was only in the reply brief that we saw it. I would agree with you if that's what you're saying, is I don't agree that that statute is ambiguous at all. That's why we didn't really get into any of that analysis below, because that was really never at issue.
Okay.
Before you move on from the statutory language, go ahead.
They never raised any actions of gross negligence or willful, did they?
That's correct. It wasn't pled in the complaint, but also I think in multiple places in the briefing on appeal, it was conceded that there was no ill intent here, and they weren't essentially pleading willful and wanton misconduct or gross negligence. Yes, Judge Ide.
Yeah. Okay. I just, for the plain meaning, I'm wondering, why have you jumped to the purpose of the statute? And I guess you're saying because there was no argument that was ambiguous, but can't you turn to the fact that you are defining a COVID-19 liability claim?
I think so, but I think counsel would say and argue, as he did in his reply brief, kind of like this contractual principle, we can't rely on the headers of what's in a contract as substance. And
but is that the header? I mean, that's what you're defining, right? A COVID-19 liability claim means a cause of action for blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I think, you know,
I want you to address that.
Sure. I think that not only is subsection B clear and unambiguous, it's also inherent in the fact that we are calling it a COVID-19 liability claim. We're not seeking to set out any other type of liability claim for a different infectious disease. It's within the name.
Well, if that's the case, mm-hmm. then I guess you call it a nexus, but what does that mean? You have to have a nexus between COVID-19 and the access or emissions?
So, and I will probably again point the court to the Mills case on this for the similar reason, is that it has to be, the nexus would be to diagnosing or treating a patient with a COVID-19 diagnosis. And I think the reason why that nexus is required, as to the earlier discussion, which is that you know, Sheridan Memorial Hospital is a governmental entity, and Wyoming's Governmental Claims Act, nothing changed related to that closed-ended tort act when Wyoming's COVID-19 immunity statutes became effective on April 6, 2021. So this isn't sort of some blanket immunity for all medical malpractice. That argument has no place, and there's absolutely no support for that. If that were to be the case, we would have seen something done to Wyoming Section 139.101 at SEC. We would have seen that. And that did not occur in this case. And I don't think that an honest reading of subsection B would be to make the argument that the Wyoming legislature intended to create blanket immunity for that.
I mean, well, what if it was an accident? I mean, so what?
Well,
I mean, if they can do it, I mean, they can... The best intent of the legislature is the language they use, and if they included very broad language about medical negligence, I mean, that's their prerogative.
Well, and absolutely. I mean, when it comes to creating immunity statutes like this, the Wyoming legislature, as does every legislature, has, you know, the ability to do that. And the language that they choose is the language that they choose. So going back to that argument, again, it's not clear, or excuse me, it is clear, and it's not ambiguous. So I don't understand why there has to be really any more analysis beyond that. I don't see the room for that. And again, it wasn't raised below. So I think we've kind of sorted out all of the sort of the statutory construction rules. But I will say this, is that one of the arguments that counsel has raised is, rather than walking through, again, not making any argument about the clarity or ambiguity of the statute, not walking through any rules of statutory construction, just going straight to the application of the absurdity doctrine. Again, I don't think there's any room or place for that here in a situation where, you know, even if the statute were to be unclear, there has to be some sort of marching through of Wyoming's rules of statutory construction and construing those statutes in pari materia to making sure that there's harmony between the two. And the absurdity doctrine is not applied in a situation to override the legislature's intent. It's only applied in a situation to reflect or, you know, give fruit or life to the legislature's intent. And I think that a fair reading of these statutes, considering the fact that these became effective on April 6, 2021, during the height of the pandemic, also in conjunction with the fact that I think over 40 other states in this country enacted similar statutes providing immunity to healthcare providers, any sort of interpretation of these statutes to lead to the conclusion that these healthcare providers would be subject to suit for treating patients with COVID-19 just flies 100% in the face of what the Wyoming legislature was intended in this case. If there are no questions, I will probably yield the remainder of my time.
Ditch Kelly?
I'm done.
I think he said no.
I think he said no. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. The case is stand submitted. I want to thank our counsel today, and we are in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow.